On behalf of the Call It Out podcast, we would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land we meet upon today, the Wadawurrung people of the Kulin Nation. We would like to pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging and acknowledge that sovereignty was never ceded. The Call It Out podcast acknowledges the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognises the continuing connection to lands, waterways and communities.
One, two.
Call It Out is a podcast led by students from Sacred Heart College and St. Joseph's College in Geelong. Listening through the lens of young people, the podcast episodes are an insightful journey into contemporary issues impacting them. Discussing the themes such as gender equality, unhealthy masculinity, everyday sexism, healthy relationships and consent, we are given an intimate invitation into what young people think.
Three, two, one.
Hi everyone and welcome to the Call It Out podcast. My name is Georgia McArdle and my pronouns are she, her.
My name is Hannah Brady and my pronouns are also she, her.
My name is Jager Fawcett and my pronouns are he, him.
And my name's Ella Goodwin and my pronouns are she, her.
We are the school captains of Sacred Heart and St. Joseph's College and we're so excited to introduce you to the Call It Out podcast. This episode contains content depicting discussions around violence against women that some might find distressing. For further information, don't hesitate to use our support service resources on our website.
Also, we'd like to give a huge shout out to Michelle Abbott for all her hard work in getting this project off the ground. Without her, we would never have received a grant to create this amazing initiative. So, Jager, I think you'd be a great person to talk about this. What is Call It Out to you?
Call It Out is a podcast led by students from Sacred Heart College and St. Joseph's College in Geelong, using the grassroots 16 Days of Activism community grant through Respect Victoria and Safe and Equal.
The podcast episodes are an insightful journey into contemporary issues impacting young people within our contemporary society. Discussing themes such as gender equality, unhealthy masculinity, everyday sexism, healthy relationships and consent, we are given an intimate invitation into what young people really think.
And as part of this, we also get to interview some really exciting people.
Yeah. Yep.
Some of these special guests include Jane Gilmore, Harry Garside and Richie Harcourt, as well as many more.
Our primary aim of this podcast is to reduce violence against women. To stop this violence from happening in the first place, we need a primary prevention approach. This means addressing the primary or underlying drivers of this violence.
We have some statistics here as to why we think this primary prevention approach is important and why we need to call it out. Every 9 days, a woman is killed by a partner or an ex-partner. It is closer to every week and often you'll hear about this in the reporting. One in two women from the age of 15 will experience sexual harassment. Almost one in four women have experienced intimate partner violence since the age of 15. Almost one in 13 men have experienced intimate partner violence since the age of 15. It's important to understand that this figure also includes men as the perpetrator. Although women do also perpetrate intimate partner violence, often it can be in self-defence. 95% of victims experience violence from a male perpetrator regardless of the victim's gender.
Our intention for the Call It Out podcast is really to discuss the importance of factors which progress to violence against women, whilst also interviewing special guests to gain an insight into these issues from other perspectives. So, Jager, what do you want to achieve through this podcast?
I guess in terms of actions, we really want to challenge the behaviours that bring on violence against women by preventing enabling of these actions before they can escalate and promoting women's independence and decision-making in public life and relationships. I think as well we want to build new social norms that foster personal identities not constrained by rigid gender stereotypes and support men and boys to develop healthy masculinity and positive supportive male peer relationships.
And some other essential actions to address the social context in which violence against women occurs include promoting and normalising gender equality in public and private life, as well as addressing the intersections between gender inequality and other forms of systematic and structural oppression and discrimination, whilst also promoting broader social justice.
We also want to address building safe, fair and equitable organisations and institutions by focusing on systemic level, strengthening positive, equal and respectful relationships between and among women and men, girls and boys, in public and private spheres.
As part of this podcast, we're addressing some large issues which are prevalent in society today. So as part of this episode, we've decided to discuss three core issues of the podcast and give you a bit of an insight into what we will be discussing during the podcast and the perspectives from some of our young people. So where do we see these issues within our contemporary society?
So I think as a student of Joey's at a mostly all boys school, I think toxic masculinity comes in the form of a box that young men need to fit into to be considered a man, and that's what we've dubbed the man box. I think typically the man box is someone who's incredibly buff, muscular, will throw his weight around and get rid of any vulnerability that could possibly exist. And I think that comes from a really systemic place in which male role models in our lives have constantly said phrases along the lines of, grow up, stop being such a sook, you know, don't be a girl, and those types of things. And that's really had a detrimental effect on what masculinity is. And those who don't fit into those boxes often fall into the trap of not feeling welcome.
That's very interesting with the phrase, don't be such a girl, because it really, I think, equates almost womanhood to something that's lesser, which I think also kind of, with that toxic masculinity, it is seeing this masculinity as the best thing you can be, the thing you should strive for.
Yeah, when often that's not really, almost unattainable in most cases, you know, it's not something that's unhealthy to be constantly achieving for this unattainable standard that is so toxic.
Like you said about that quote, like it goes both ways. It's bad to say it to boys as in toughen up, don't be a girl, but also it's derogative to a girl to say you're the opposite of being strong, independent, like you're weak, you're frail. It's, it just ties into both issues, I think.
And I think it's interesting what you said about how it's both the physical and emotional standard that you think of for what a man looks like, that strong, but also, yes, the emotional aspect, because I think when I think of it, I think more of the how men are acting, but I think potentially from a man's perspective, it could be that physical aspect as well.
Yeah, I don't think I'd thought of that really either. Yeah, I'd more thought of it from a like an emotional perspective, like a mindset that you have, rather than actually, oh, here are visual kind of things that I should be aiming for, you know. I don't know how to explain it properly, but...
Yeah, that hadn't occurred to me.
Yeah, and I feel like often when we talk about, if you think a toxic male, you think of the physical characteristics, but I think it's also important to acknowledge that to have muscles, to like footy, like stereotypical things like that, that's healthy if that's what you enjoy, but it's more so the approaches, like you said, the emotional capacity of these people, depending on how they act and how they present themselves, is mainly why this masculinity is toxic, why it's being passed on like that way.
I'm actually interested about, do you think going to an all-boys school, do you think that environment's kind of there where people feel like they have to be? Sorry, I feel like I'm interviewing you, but...
Does it fester? Yeah, almost? But... Like, does it make it worse? Do you think being at an all-boys school, or is it predominantly all-boys school?
I think a lot of teachers have made the point that boys behave differently in co-ed and same-sex environments. In terms of the way that sort of my experience with it has been, there are two mainly formative years at St. Joseph's, and that's years 7 and 8. And that's when boys are starting to find their own friend group, starting to find who their people are. And that's where a lot of this standoffish, a lot of those values get instilled into those boys. So the people who were most vulnerable in years 7 and 8 were often the ones who were treated the worst and made fun of, class outcasts. So what you have to do to survive in such an environment is to not be different to, you know, the two footy boys at the front of the classroom who are, you know, talking back to the teacher and telling the nerds, I'm doing air quotes here, to shut up. And I think that's sort of what now, as a senior student, why we've found that it's so difficult for people to talk about their mental health and talk about anything that isn't football related or anything along those lines, and why we've found in the last couple of years that we're just not opening up because those times have impacted us as a year level. I'm sure it's the same across the board.
Yeah, definitely.
And you're so right that it is when people are most vulnerable that these issues occur, because 13 and 14 is such a difficult age. I mean, I'm only 17, I say this. I have all the wisdom in the world. But you're setting these standards at a time when you don't necessarily have that sense of self and confidence. And I would also like to ask, how do you think that this toxic masculinity affects men interact with women as well? Because I think that's an important facet to discuss.
That's a good point, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The thing in... a lot of my mates who go to Sacred Heart and go to Clonard, a lot of them have just told me some absolute horror stories about how young men, you know, as a whole, some young men have conducted themselves, and that's what people talk about, the way that, you know, people have been derogatory, people haven't been respectful. And I think that affects perception of young men as a whole, and in the way that, you know, the people who aren't like that often get branded. And that's something that as a leadership team this year we're going to work on, you know, improving.
Yeah, definitely.
Many predominantly boys' schools would have that problem.
Yeah, and I think it's just a few who do something wrong and all of a sudden it reflects the entire school. It just creates a cycle of, you know, just this environment that
I think if people are hearing that derogatoriness towards Joey's, that might also maybe inflame their behaviour, because if they think people are going to have a bad perception of them anyway, it's just throwing fuel on the fire almost.
Yeah, true.
And again, coming into that, do you want to fit in? Like, do you want to stand out and take a step back and go, no, I don't want to be part of this? Or do you want to just join it and, add fuel to the flame, like you said? Yeah.
It's almost easier to just add fuel to the flame than try and put it out.
That's the thing, fitting in is easier. Maybe not emotionally for yourself, but socially it's way easier to just do what everyone else is doing. You don't have to...
I know what you mean. I don't know. I'm actually interested on what everyone thinks about this. Do you reckon co-ed schools, do you think you'd see less or more of this kind of toxic masculinity behaviour?
I know a lot of studies suggest that predominantly males will do better in co-ed schools, but I don't know if that reflects their attitudes as well. Does that mean if they do perform better academically, or does it mean they're more respectful?
Because I've heard that
empowered people.
Women do better in... predominantly female schools, academically. But, I think from my perspective, being a predominantly girls' school, that it's a confidence thing, because if at those kind of formative ages, if boys tend to be more confident and loud in the classroom, it's very easy for girls to step back. And then once they've set that step back for so long, then it's hard for them to
then step up again
in the classroom. And those ladies, when they are more confident. Yeah. So I think that probably is the benefit to a predominantly girls' school. But, I'd be interested... relates to boys in a co-ed school.
Yeah, because we kind of have both extremes. We've got the all boys, the all girls. We don't have anyone from the middle. I think another really interesting topic we could talk about is probably microaggressive, but also aggressive language that we see in society today. But starting off with microaggressive language, as far as I know, microaggressive language can be related to pretty much any kind of discrimination that you can see anywhere, and they're commonplace daily verbal, behavioural or environmental sites, whether they're intentional or unintentional, they can communicate discrimination or derogatory terms towards groups of people.
So the way I think of it is it's a lot to do with systematic oppression, so race, gender, sexuality, those kind of institutionally marginalised groups. And my perception of it, at least, is that microaggressions are things that I would find difficult to call out, because they sometimes could be interpreted as a one-off thing, or you're making a big deal out of it. So if you get interrupted in a sentence, say... I'm a woman and a man interrupts me, maybe that's just accidental, slip of the tongue, but maybe that happens to me all the time because I don't speak, I take more pause in my sentences, or it's just assumed that something I have to say is less important. I would interpret that as a microaggression, but if there's a one-off thing, it would be really hard to tell someone about that, I'm being dramatic, or that's not as important.
It's quite a subjective thing, I think, as well. It can be so subtle, and like you said, you could... in situations, if you were to be interrupted by someone, it could be just because they've accidentally interrupted you and just completely overlooked it, or they're, like I said, systematic thing that's inbuilt that they're used to doing that.
Yeah, because even if they don't realise that, it can still be a microaggression, because a lot of the times those things people won't realise that they're doing them, but it's just as harmful.
Yeah, just little comments that are built into society that people always say, and, you know, you might have overlooked them before, but when you really kind of take a deeper look at them, they're actually really not that progressive.
When you step back and break it down, you go, wow. Yeah. Like you said, Ella mentioned, going back to the part of it's hard to call these things out. I know we encourage people to be upstanders, not bystanders, but when it comes to the microaggressive, it's not just language, it's just interactions with other people. It can be difficult to distinguish whether or not you're being unreasonable or if the person is actually being microaggressive.
And I think, we mentioned before the stop being such a girl. I think that's a microaggression, because a lot of people will say that and they don't think that it's... Well, maybe it just is fully aggressive.
Yeah.
But they might not think that as a bad thing, or they might not realise that they're not saying in a way to put down girls. You could imagine a parent saying that to their child and they're not meaning it to put down their daughter, but it is.
Yeah.
So it's aggressive, but they don't mean it to be, but it's still just as hurtful and it still institutionalises it. Yeah.
It's been built in our cult, in our society for a while, and I feel like even there's a lot of references to females oh, that's a girl push-up. Do a proper push-up.
Yeah, no.
And just things like that. Do you need to sexualise it? Do you need to put a...
I feel like, as Alice said before, they're just always towards marginalised groups. So once you do take a step back and you look, you're like, oh, that's not that great. At schools, I don't think... I wouldn't say, I guess, teachers use it, but I would say students, I'd say especially younger year levels,
like said Jacob before, you were mentioning about year 7 and 8, that's where people are finding themselves, finding their friendship group. That's probably where in a lot of schools you will see that shift and that use of microaggressive and obviously aggressive language.
Just for an example of like a microaggression, a lot of people who speak English as a second language may get the like sentence, "You're so articulate," or like, "You speak English so well."
Yeah, just little comments like that, which are really, like, they're really hurtful, you know?
There's no expectation that you would be able to speak English, but that's not true just because they speak another language as well. Like, I think maybe your meaning as a compliment, that still can be aggressive and hurtful.
Yeah. And like I said, it's predominantly in the minority groups who've been discriminated against for centuries.
I was just on what Alice said just before. One of the things I saw the other day was this guy, and he says how derogatory it is, and no one sees it as derogatory, but by people come up to him, and he's an Asian man, and they go, where are you from? And he's like, "I was born here, and my parents were born here," you know. And it's like one of those things where it's like people don't mean anything derogatory by it, but just the fact that it needs to be said and not said to another group of people is something that, you know, is a microaggression.
Yeah, because it's like, where are you really from? Like, you don't belong here, almost, I think, is the subtext.
But then you wouldn't probably go up to, like, a straight white man and be like, "Oh, where are you really from?" You know, like,
exactly.
Where are you from?
It's that.
Or like a straight white female. I don't know, anyone.
Pointing that difference out, it's not celebrating if someone does come from, like, I'm not sure, but it's not, it's certainly not bringing it to light in a positive way. Like, justify yourself.
That's exactly, I think, hit the nail on the head there. Justify it. You don't belong. I'm pointing it out, and explain yourself.
Explain to me, yeah. Exactly.
And you aren't owed someone's personal history.
Exactly.
Just, like, meeting them, I don't think.
No,
like,
yeah, exactly.
People shouldn't have to explain why they exist in a certain place.
Yeah.
No, yeah. People can exist where they want to exist, and I feel like just little comments like that, they're just so harmful and so hurtful, and people don't realise it, but they should. Think about what they say before they say.
Okay, so our third topic is going to be consent, which I think is a very important issue to a lot of young people in our contemporary society.
I think a really interesting topic that isn't talked about enough is platonic consent, because I feel like everyone gets to the point where they're like, "Oh, we need to teach consent in schools and stuff," and they freak out because they're like, "Oh, we don't want to teach about sex," you know. But you can teach consent from the age of 3, 4 upwards. Just teach kids to ask before they give a hug or a high five or anything like that, you know.
Yeah, with siblings or classmates, I think consent almost has this connotation with sex and relationships, but it shouldn't be. It's just, it's about all interpersonal relationships.
Well, it's like if you have a school, like, you'll sign a consent form.
Yeah.
There's multiple meanings of consent. Like I said, people first likely think, "Oh, yeah, sexual consent." But, yeah, consent is just confirming and checking in with someone. So I think it has a lot of different applications.
And I think what building, again, what Alice said before, coming from a young age, St. Pat's in Hamlin Heights, wherever it is, Geelong West, got absolutely slammed a couple of years ago. Because they so-calledly banned hugging. But would you like to...
Yeah. I went there. So our principal, very reasonable guy, he spoke at assembly to us, and basically all he said was, "Look, we've seen a lot of year six, like the older kids, particularly just running up and hugging a preppy, going, 'Oh my gosh, they're so cute, I'm going to hug a preppy.'" And all he said was just ask, "Can I hug you?" He said it very well. It was a really thought out thing. And then the news came and said principal bans hugs. It was all over the news. And, yeah, I remember being like year 3 or something at the time, but still kind of thinking what he said was fine. It was very good.
And if it made sense to a year 3, then it obviously could have made sense to a year 6 and to adults who wrote the news, maybe, you know.
I think you've stumbled upon a good point there, though, in that the year 6 has more power than the prep. They're physically bigger. Mm-hmm. They're emotionally and intellectually probably a bit more mature. And a lot of inconsent conversations, you have to factor that hierarchy into it.
And they're taking advantage of the prep's vulnerability, just being a little preppy. Like, "Oh my gosh, they're so cute."
Well, they can just run over and pick them up, you know?
Yeah. Like, there used to be people who would just run over and be like, "Oh my gosh, they're so little. They're my buddy." Like, and all he said at the assembly, it wasn't a huge thing, just a short, "Just remember, ask someone, 'Can I hug you?' or 'Can I have a high five?"
Yeah. I feel like if I was a prep and I was, you know, every day I'd be bombarded by 20 year sixes, like, it would probably make me quite stressed, you know? Like,
exactly.
They're so much bigger than you. But
yeah, they came, the news team came the following day, and it was just madness.
It's so true. That's such an easy way to teach consent in schools, is just saying, "Can I hug you before I hug you?" Or like,
and I think that kind of power structure exists in consent when we do look at sex and relationships as well, though, because I think if you are in a place of more societal power, you do have to be careful with consent, that you're being wary of other people's boundaries because you are in a position where it could be perceived as forcing them to do things.
Just acknowledge it.
Yeah. Yeah. What actually is consent? Asking someone repeatedly isn't an enthusiastic yes, it's wearing people down.
Mm-hmm. And they just released laws about, what was it called? Affirmative consent? Enthusiastic consent?
Enthusiastic.
It was, I think affirmative. Yeah. Mm. Affirmative. Oh, I thought it was yeah.
Okay, maybe.
But that's kind of, that's what it means though. Like affirmative yeah, consent yeah. means like enthusiastic consent. And I think that that's not taught. That could be taught from kinder age, you know?
Because yeah. that, I think that no means no mentality was the previous kind of attitude toward consent, that if people say no, stop.
Yeah.
But really it should be don't start until you get a yes. You shouldn't be starting anything until you have that conversation that it is agreed upon and it's okay.
Yeah.
And not a yes that's like, oh, fine, yes.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's not a yes. Mm. That's a...
I guess so.
Like, it's a pushover, you know? It's like, you've asked. Here's my yes. Here's what you want.
I think of old, like, Disney shows where there's, like, a little boy and he's getting advice from his dad and he's like, oh, how do I get a girlfriend? And he's like, just keep asking her every day. Like, I talked to your mum and I asked her every day to get...
Even the built-in, like, you know, all these Disney movies are just like, oh, you know, you're just waiting for a prince to come and sweep you off your feet, you know? Like, so... built into kids' movies and kids' TV shows.
And even shows, like, from the past decade or so, like, I've seen a few, like you said, Ella, almost word for word, where the husband said, oh, yeah, I bothered my wife now when she used to work at this shop. I bothered her and bothered her until she said...
At a place of employment.
Yes, until she said, yeah, I'll go out with you.
Breaking Bad, it happens. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, first episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're... That's the thing, like someone's employed, they can't leave and you're wearing them down and making them uncomfortable in public. When you lay it out like that, it doesn't sound like consent.
No.
Like, does it?
It doesn't, 100% not.
And people trap that in this view of like in the same way that, you know, respect is something that you need for a relationship and love and care, you know, persistence is what that's not called anything, you know, derogatory or bad or negative. It's just called, oh, you're just being persistent, you know, keep trying, slugger, you'll get there one day.
Yeah. And I think that ties into the toxic masculinity as well, that like it's somehow your fault if someone isn't saying yes and you've got to keep trying. The relationship might just not work, like you don't have to be interested.
These things don't always plan out. It's a personal
failing. I'd say it's a heterosexual relationship of the man because he wasn't able to get a woman, again, like the possession of a woman.
Oh, the possession, yeah.
Because I do a whole topic on that.
Yeah.
I want to go back to how people approach conversations around consent and like education in schools and perhaps the awkwardness of that conversation. I know we were talking before we recorded this podcast about the milkshake video. George, do you want to give a lead into a bit about what it's about?
The milkshake video was an epic fail by the federal government last year. They pretty much attempted to create this video for high school students around consent education and it was just the most confusing video I think that you could ever watch. It got taken down pretty quickly after it was put up because of the negative feedback it received. But
so it's got a man and a woman in it and the woman is asking the man, would you like to try my milkshake? And he said yes and he takes a sip of it and he's like, no, I'm actually okay. And then she shoves it in his face, being that she violates his consent. But it's just, I don't think, we've watched the first couple of minutes of it, I don't know if it says consent at all or if it does, it's not very much.
I've watched the whole thing, it doesn't mention consent once.
See, it's if you
makes references to pizza and milkshake.
You know, I guess it makes sense. The idea of the line, I guess, you know, you're pushing over someone's boundaries and stuff. That makes sense, but it was just presented in a way that was just so disconnected to what it was actually trying to achieve.
If you spoke about moving the line, which I think is a good way to put it, and if you spoke directly about it with consent, yes, and that would be a better way to film it. But the fact that they just covered it up with, oh, it's milkshakes, it's a bit of fun, and it's pizza, I think they just kind of got rid of the whole reason why we're addressing this issue.
I think that's it comes very poignantly at a time when that federal government was under a lot of fire for allegations of sexual assault and rape within cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in the same way that they tried to knock those allegations under the rug and throw away all those issues, you know, coming up to an election, they sort of just brushed past this and used this as like, you know, oh, well, you know, we're not speaking about it. It's broad, you know, people can interpret it the way they want, which is the same way they were conducting extremely serious allegations.
Yeah, but I feel like it's just that whole, like, you know, if you leave it up to interpretation, are you really passing on the message that you want to by creating this video?
And it's for education. So we want to be equipping, like, kids with the language they need to address this problem, because if someone's consent gets violated, you don't want to be having them tell a parent about this complicated milkshake allegory. You want to be able to say, like, have the terminology they need to discuss it with parents, with their peers, because this correct terminology is, it's how you make change. Like, if you're, I don't even know, it's,
I know what you mean. Yeah, you need, I feel like even term, like, consent is such a hard word to put a definition on, I'd say, but I think it's just the education and the approach that's being taken is just so not, I guess, by the government, but also by schools, is just so not.
And I feel like the video didn't necessarily reflect people who work in that department and work and use that all that terminology. I felt like it was a bit of a mock of it, of sorts. It didn't feel like it incorporated.
It looked like a parody.
Yeah, it didn't look like it incorporated their knowledge, their understanding, all the education and all the work that goes into good and better resources. I think it was kind of, yeah, just a bit
did
of a
did you know
parody.
They paid almost $4 million to create that video just for it to be taken down after 3 days?
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm dead serious.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
My goodness. I
was going to say, the government paid the media company $3.7 million.
My goodness.
Wow. Yeah.
I would also like to ask everyone's opinion. In the video, it's got the woman putting the milkshake into the man's face, which obviously we know that consent can be violated by any party. But I do think it's interesting when so many victims of sexual harassment are women, the choice to have a woman be the perpetrator. I don't know if that necessarily should be the approach we're taking to the conversation.
But I feel like even if you do put, you know, you can put either the male or the female as the perpetrator, but I feel like if you're not actually getting the message across, then you're not actually gaining anything by it, you know. But I think it is interesting, though. I did notice that when we watched the video. I was like, it's interesting that they've put the female as the...
Yeah, it's not that it shouldn't.
Yeah.
Like, you should... Yeah. Both things happen, but it's just, if this is going to be the one video that the government makes, is that the right...
Especially considering it's not a very good quality video as well. You'd think, like you said, if it was a good one, if it was informative, and if they even spoke about it, yeah, again, it can be from both parties, although predominantly has been male in the past, being the perpetrator. But I think it's just an interesting point you made.
And the way they portrayed the woman too was something that I noticed, like stereotypically crazy, eat it all.
Yeah.
Like just the way that, you know, the man was portrayed, you know, just as his standard, you know, man. And then you've got the woman who's standing next to her who just, like, out of nowhere turns into this crazy person, you know, shoving milkshakes down someone's throat, and what connotations that portrayal has for, you know, the young audience who was supposed to watch
this. And the giggling, and the fact that once he kind of said, like, no, this all right, this is not on, she was like, oh, like, it's...
She's kind of in
not taking it seriously.
Almost.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, she is.
Mm. Which, if you are violating consent, you are. But, it's that... I think you've hit the nail on the head, that kind of crazy ex-girlfriend almost perception that we have of women, which may be the case when violating consent, but it can also just as easily be someone who's seems to be rational. I don't know, like, it's not, the people who are perpetrators aren't necessarily a stereotype or some cardboard cutout. They're unfortunately real people that exist in the world.
Exactly. I feel like also the way they portrayed it, I think we saw it briefly in the video, but it was the terms they were using, like they used things like, I think it was like action zone and like, you know, the whole moving the line concept. Like, obviously it works if you've got some context, but there was no context. So people kind of almost don't know where to link these ideas to, you know.
It looked like a video game the way they had the move the line. Like, it looked like a tennis game or something. Like, I think they just need to just knock it on the head and just say, look, this is consent. You need to use the proper terminology and just get people, young people especially, aware about it.
How would we all like to see consent addressed in our school or just in high schools in general? Because I think it's interesting to see... Yeah, what would you want done?
Honest education. Not like honest, but I feel like, I don't know, if this milkshake video is anything, just don't beat around the bush, you know, have a general conversation, like a good conversation about like what consent is and real life situations that will happen, you know, that there are real people and it's a real conversation and it's a real issue in society, you know, that's what I want to see.
I think for an all-boys school, my opinion hasn't changed and it always has been. If men are the number one perpetrators of this, then what is the point of not being completely and utterly straight to the point and telling them what it is and what behaviours they shouldn't do and what behaviours are wrong and what behaviours are right and what, you know, informed consent and what enthusiastic consent is, instead of showing them from every year since year seven a video about tea? in which they walk out going, what was that? You know, what does that mean? Yep. What does that mean? What have I got to do with tea? I drink coffee, you know, all this stuff. But probably one of the reasons why this isn't changing is because no one's actually heard the words consent. You know, they're hearing about, you know, don't make someone tea if they're asleep, you know.
Yeah. I would like to see consent education from a lot of different relationship styles. So we really only see heterosexual consent between a man and a woman. Yep. And I think that we need to look at consent in those platonic relationships, in different romantic relationships that aren't straight. All those kind of different relationship styles are really important, because, and really just any sex education at all, but especially consent, because in healthy relationships, all those stuff you need to show, not just from the like main, I'm doing air quotes, outlook of society, or what we would think of as a typical couple, but lots of different relationships.
I think that's a really good point you've made.
There's a lack of education on that in general, let alone with consent.
Like I said, even with the video, straight couple, a male and a female, can we flip the script and have different relationships? It doesn't even have to be a romantic relationship. It can be a relationship between your peers, your family, your friends, your teachers at school, anyone. But yeah, I think I'd like to see, kind of similar to all of you, sound like I'm repeating myself, but I would like to see more education in schools. But I think also getting, obviously health teachers are amazing to give this advice, but I think it would be good to have guest speakers come in, because I know that's when you have the opportunity for students to reach out, to put their hand up, to ask a question, to stay behind and speak with the guest speaker, because often not many people might be an uncomfortable subject for them to talk about with someone who they see every day. They might just want to ask an expert. Because, so I think that's important as well.
Yeah. If you're having a conversation with your teacher, you then have to go see them the next day, which hopefully the relationships we have with our teachers are open and honest. Mm. But
for some people, we've got to acknowledge that might not be their best.
Even if you had a dedicated teacher to teaching that kind of stuff, you know, someone that was an expert in the subject.
Yeah. So we'd like to thank you all so much for listening today to our introduction for the Call It Out podcast.
We are so excited for you to listen to all the upcoming podcasts as part of the 16 Days of Activism.
So, to finish, what do you all think we can do to call it out?
Well, I guess we'll just have to listen and find out, won't we?